Baby, a podcast where me, Nicole Byer, tries to figure out how I'm still single, even though if you ask me to pull the lint from between your toes and put it in a dish and serve it to myself, I would. Oh boy, I'm running out of these. I'm running very
you
low
got a
on
million.
This. I'm running so low. Okay, that person you just heard is my guest today. She's written for Kimmy Schmidt, Ghosted, People from Earth, People of Earth, People from Earth. It was on TBS. You better believe it's Sharla Lauriston.
Hi.
Did I say that right?
Lauriston. Close enough.
It's so funny because I've known you for probably a decade at this
point.
And we hosted a show together.
We did.
And I have been mispronouncing your name.
Everybody does it. I don't know why. I mean, it's because it's my name, but everyone messes it up.
I think what happens is if there's more than like three or four letters, you're like, I don't know.
Right.
It's a crapshoot. I'll just try something.
And they always mix up the same letters, the S and the N. People say Lauriston, and it's Lauriston.
Lauriston.
Yeah.
Please welcome Sharla Lauriston.
Hello.
Clap your hands. I really hope every time I introduce a guest that people are at home clapping.
I think they're driving, probably. I don't think they should clap.
But I mean, I clap when I drive. I'm also sometimes worried about how dumb I'm getting. I was watching TV with my roommate, John. This was two nights ago. And I looked up from the TV and AP Bio was on. And I looked at the clock and it seemed like it had just started. And I looked at the clock and I was like, AP Bio comes on at 8:49. And he goes, no, Nicole, I just changed the channel. And then I don't remember what I did, but he was like, Nicole, I literally watched you change into a person who died. He said I like recoiled into the pillow and went, oh, no. I just felt so dumb in that moment.
We're all dumb in that way. I don't think that's like actual stupidity. I think it's
you
know, we're all like airheady sometimes in that way.
Sometimes my airheadiness really flabbergasts me. Before I started taking ADD medication, Sashir and I were having a conversation about Blac Chyna and Rob Kardashian and how their show was debuting on September 11th. And I was like, that's shady. That's really shady. That's like someone who really doesn't believe in their relationship. And then we stopped talking. And then Sashir goes, wait, what date does it come on again? And my brain went, uh-oh. We were talking about something. I have no idea what it is or who it is, but it must have just happened. And I don't know. So I went, were we just talking? Yes.
Do you smoke a lot of weed?
Yeah.
I've tried to curb my weed habit because I realize that it really makes me forgetful. And I'm already a forgetful person. And I'll be at work or I'll be in the middle of serious meetings and I'll completely space. And once or twice it's happened at shows where I'll completely space and it's really scary. So I've really tried to like curb the weed because I think it's not helping.
But I'm like not a functional stoner. I cannot smoke weed and then live my life in the world.
Same. I have to smoke in one location and I can't have anything to do.
Same.
But I do think, like, if I smoke 5 days in a week, I'm forgetful.
Oh.
My sleep is not as good. I get headaches.
Oh.
Like, I really think it's just the consistent smoking that makes you kind of, like, I see people smoke. I mean, we're in LA. People smoke everywhere all the time.
All the time.
And
all day,
every
day.
And I don't know how. Like, I was in San Francisco once and my Lyft driver told me that he was high right now. And I was like, first of all, I don't think you should disclose that information. And second of all, I can kind of tell anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how the fuck you're driving while you're high. I can't do anything while I'm
really?
High.
Oh, really? See, I could drive when I'm high. One of the things I do is, like, if I have an audition or like a bunch of shit to do during the day and then I have an evening that's, like, free and I don't have anything to do till later, I'll just, like, fucking smoke in my car and then sit in traffic and giggle to myself.
What?
Also, I'm, like, a movie person who's high. Like, I just giggle. I love to giggle when I'm stoned. Also, I have a hard time finding strains that agree with me.
Same.
So, like, I mean, sometimes I'll smoke. I like shitty weed. Hmm. People love it. They're like, this will fucking knock you on your ass and you'll leave your body and you'll pass away. I don't want that.
Right.
I want really shitty weed where I'm just like, what are we going to do later? You can't see me right now because podcasting is not a visual medium, but I'm just bouncing.
She's bouncing.
And moving my hands around.
But
that's the weed I like.
I like weed that gives me a good creative high, like a happy high.
Yes.
But I also am prone, I get very anxious and depressed, or I can get very anxious and depressed. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, whenever I'm smoking those kinds of weed, I think they're called sativas. Yeah, they are. They make me extremely paranoid.
Sativa is an upper, yeah, allegedly.
The sativa.
And then the indica is a downer, allegedly.
Yeah.
I have these little pre-rolls that are a hybrid, mm-hmm, and I feel like it's like the shitty like dust that they, yeah, put in these pre-rolls because they were free, and I love them. And
those,
I think,
are,
I have to go back and be like,
because they're the most mellow high.
Yeah, I just want to be a little mellow.
Yeah,
because if I smoke too much, or like too much of good weed, I go, what?
It makes me
am
bananas.
I doing.
Why are we here?
Yes.
Like,
am I actually funny?
Am I doing a good job?
Tomorrow I have to get on a stage.
Why do I do that?
People are going to laugh. Like, what if they don't? Also, what if I never figure out what we're meant to do while we're here? Like, I just get too much in my head.
Do you ever, like, wonder how you write jokes? Like, I feel like every time I write a joke and it's funny, it's a miracle. Like,
yes.
I don't know how I write jokes.
Well, I don't write jokes stoned. I can't, because I once wrote a sketch stoned, mm-hmm, and it was about bougie mice.
Oh, this sounds good.
And it's based on the mice in my New York City apartment would not eat the peanut butter we left in traps, but they would eat blueberries. And
these,
I was like, these are some bougie ass
mice.
Who were like, you better only serve me some organic, fresh, whole foods blueberries.
We had a mouse in my first New York City apartment that literally we would turn on the lights in hopes that it would run away, like, mm-hmm, when the lights turned on, but it wouldn't run away.
This
it would
is
literally
New York?
This is in New York City. This,
yeah,
is in Harlem, New York.
Mm-hmm.
It would literally just stand on its hind,
yep,
legs in the middle of the living,
yep,
room where everyone could see it. And we were like, oh, this is your house, not
I don't
our house.
Say the word often, but New York City mice are some real hood
They're
niggas.
Gangster ass
they
mice. They don't give
fucking
a shit, dude.
They don't give a shit. Like, we had this mouse in my house who you would feel like next to you on the couch, and you look over and the mouse would just be sitting there watching TV being like, what's up?
Yep.
Aren't we both watching?
We both live here.
This rerun of Frasier?
Yep. But you're a piece of shit because you pay rent,
yes,
and I don't. That's
how I felt like
the mouse.
I pay rent and you're just living
talk
here.
Talk to me.
Eating my food.
Yeah.
Ugh. I
gross.
Miss New York, but also
I
could never. Really?
I miss not driving. I really hate driving.
But don't. Do you have a car?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have to. I mean, I...
Well, some people don't have cars.
I actually think... I mean, I didn't have a car for the first 2 years that I was here.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved not having a car because, mm-hmm, I didn't have to worry about parking.
What kind of car did you get?
A Honda two-door red sporty car.
A Civic.
A Civic.
A CRV.
I think it's a Civic.
Okay.
Clearly, I don't know since I didn't say that.
No,
so.
I know. My sister and I were having a conversation where she was like, how are you? And I was like, good. My car's in the shop. Something's wrong with my sunroof, and I don't have a sunroof. The man at the shop was like, there's a problem with your sunroof. And I said, sir, I don't have one. And he went, And that's
interesting.
It. And I said, well, all right. Okay. So whatever. They fixed it. And I had a loaner car because I take it back to the dealership because it's still under warranty, magically. And my sister's like, oh, what kind of car do you have? I was like, a convertible. She's like, is that the brand? And I was like, what? No, convertible's not the brand of car. I got so angry with her because she grew up with me and I love cars and I've talked about cars. And I was like, do you never listen to me? Did you think convertible was a brand?
No, I know it's a type of car.
Okay.
But I've also messed up in that way, so I won't judge your sister.
My sister is the sweetest. I asked her if I could tell this story on the podcast, and she was like, sure. One day I'll have to just have her on. But she had a date with this dude and it went well. And she was like, I was like, did you guys make out? And she goes, yeah, we were kissing. And then like, I kept feeling his tongue trying to penetrate my mouth. So then I was like, I guess I'll just open my mouth if that's where his tongue needs to be. And I was like, Catherine, yeah, he's trying to like French kiss you. And she's like, I don't know. I was like, does my tongue go in his mouth? And I was like, yes. And then I was like, how did your second date go? She was like, well, I just had a bout with the stomach flu, so I was holding in a fart the whole time. And I was like, why didn't you cancel on him? She was like, I didn't want him to go away. And I was like, oh, girl.
You gotta have her on.
She is so funny in a way that I don't understand sometimes.
How old is she?
I'm going to be 32 or 33, I think. So she's either 33 or 34.
Okay.
I think she's 34, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, but she's polar opposite of me. I'm like 5'7", she's 5 foot nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I would even say she's 4'11", but she likes to be like...
She's a tiny lady.
Tiny, fat ass, tiny titties, good waist, great hair, good face. Like, my sister's hot.
Okay.
She's so hot. Yeah, we're very different people.
All right.
She's a very quiet, hot person in a corner that you're like, are they hot? And you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, they hot.
How many siblings do you have?
I have 6.
Oh, yes, I did know this. You come from a very big family, and you are a twin.
I am.
And then are there another set of twins? No, just you guys.
Just us. We're the only twins in the family.
Which is so wild.
But I have twin cousins. Twins run in the family.
That's wild.
Yeah.
And are you, you're Haitian.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And then your parents, they're both from Haiti?
Yeah. I was born in Haiti.
What?
Yeah.
This I did not know.
What?
Did not know.
I was very much born in Haiti.
When did you move here?
When I was 4 years old.
Oh, so you don't remember Haiti.
Yeah. I remember bits.
Do you? I don't really remember very much about life before, like, kindergarten.
I think it's because it was a very... I don't know. I remember beaches. We lived in Saint-Louis-du-Nord, which is like a coastal part of Haiti. It's like northern coast of Haiti.
Oh.
And so I remember like very, and my memory is garbage. So like it's like very vivid, like beach, the house, or like specific things that happened, but not very much.
I'm always jealous of like movies where someone recalls something in great detail from their childhood. And they're like, and that is why I'm fucked up. I'm like, why can't I remember more? I don't know. I also have a terrible memory. Like, I don't know what I ate for dinner yesterday. Yeah.
It's because there's too many things for us to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think people remember the things that impacted them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I was just watching the Robert Durst, the Jinx special on HBO. I'm super late. I'm always late.
I've also never seen it. So I haven't even arrived.
Yeah, but he had a lot of fucked up shit that happened in his childhood. So he has, like, a very vivid memory of his childhood. Even though he's, like, old. He's, like, in his 70s, you know? So,
I remember traumatic things. Like, I don't know if I've talked about this before, but I once fingerprinted the wallpaper in the downstairs bathroom with ink. Just all over it. And my dad went to the bathroom and he was like, no! And I was like, tee-hee-hee, what's up, dude? Do you like what I did? And he did not. And he picked me up by my head.
Yeah.
And was like, what are you doing? And then set me down. And I just remember being like, is my head going to pop right off my body?
Yeah.
Also, I think I did a great job. Turns out, you know, people do not like it when you fingerprint their wallpaper.
Yeah. That was a little bit of a reaction. It was a bit much on your dad's part. I don't know if that was necessary.
No, probably not. But I feel like Black parents often react in a way that is a little too extreme for the thing that was done.
So you've talked about your therapist on this podcast a lot, and I actually go to the same therapist.
Uh-huh.
And this very same therapist has talked to me about trauma.
Trauma from slavery.
From slavery and being beaten.
Blew my fucking
because,
mind.
You know, of course, Haitians beat the shit out of their kids.
Black parents beat their kids.
And it's and you don't ever think about it as trauma. Because you just think about, I did something bad that I definitely should have been punished for. But I don't know if what I did, you know, was necessary to get like whooped.
Yes.
With and it's rage.
Very interesting because I feel like a lot of white parents do not beat their children.
Yeah. And they
because what they've, should. You know, transferred down. I mean, yeah. White people have trauma as well.
They do. Absolutely.
They watching someone get beat, you cannot live a life and not hold some ill feelings about seeing that. Like, I refuse to believe that you don't feel some type of way about it. But like, you pass down that trauma. And I feel like you've also passed down like, well, yeah, sure, my kid is bad, but like not as bad as this one over here. And I think that's a thing that's been passed down, which it's just so interesting to think that like something that happened to your ancestors hundreds of years ago affects yeah. you today now.
Yeah. Every Black person I know is in therapy and if they're not, I encourage them to be.
And I'm so grateful and thankful that therapy amongst, I feel like, our generation of Black people is less stigmatized. Uh-huh. But like my uncles and people in my family who are like 40s and up are like, you don't need therapy.
Yeah.
Why are you on ADD medication? And like, because it was life changing.
Yeah.
And it didn't save my life, but it made my life so much more easier to manage.
Yeah.
And it's helpful. And my uncle at one point was like, I don't think you have ADD. And I was like, well, what's wrong with me? He's like, I don't know. And I was like, cool.
Great.
Keep that diagnosis good, to yourself.
Good explanation. When I told my mom that I was seeing a therapist, she told me that I just needed to pray. I was just like, you know, thank you.
And like, not to knock anybody's religion, but like when you pray, no one is telling you something tangible that you can do to make your life more manageable.
I actually would knock religion for okay. this specifically okay. and specifically for Black people. You yeah. know, just because I grew up in the Haitian church and I saw how it held back Black people in particular, immigrants and like Black immigrants in particular. I think like if you're Black in this country, imagine being a Black immigrant in this country.
Yes.
You don't speak the language. You already feel, you know, inferior because you are
Black.
Because you are treated that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you have the challenge of not speaking the language and the challenge of navigating a world where you just absolutely don't know what the fuck the customs are. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's such a scary thing to navigate. And I mean, I don't know if every church is like this, but I grew up in a church that I feel didn't help,
mm-hmm.
you know, like just did not help. I think like we were taught to be like deferential for no reason, mm-hmm. never ask questions, never question anyone,
yes.
never speak up and well, speak up to
all
authority.
Churches.
It's all this
churches
is the things that I think are really
are like do not question
don't
what
question
the leader
anything.
Is saying.
And I think like Black people can't afford to not question.
Yeah, you got to question everything
you
because
do.
You don't know if you're like if someone's giving you the short end of the stick or like what? Like it's fucked.
But also, like, education and knowledge and just knowing mm-hmm. is the only thing we have.
Yeah.
That's what I think. And I'm just like, if I don't know how to navigate my own emotions
mm-hmm.
and, like, figure out how my past is affecting the way that I am every day or, like, affecting, mm-hmm. like, depression or anxiety or whatever, I need tools.
Yes.
And I can't go to a church that takes those tools away from me. I really think it's a detriment to
Ooh,
a lot of communities.
You just took me to church.
Girl.
Isn't that funny? but I just want to, okay. So someone DM'd me mm-hmm. on Instagram and said, hey, love you and think you're great. But just to let you know, the system is built for rich white people to become richer, not just any old white person. You're super great, but please don't lump all white people together. I understand the irony of me saying that, but I'm a French Canadian boy whose ancestors were opposed and whose ancestors were oppressed and never owned slaves. Well, I won't say your real name. I fully disagree with you.
Yeah.
The system was not made for rich white people because when we walk into a job interview, me and you, nice white man, no one's going to ask you what your tax bracket is. They're just going to see the color of your skin, and their implicit bias is going to want to hire you over me. Implicit bias is a thing that people don't ever think about. And then I read that message and was like, Black women can't wear natural hairstyles to some jobs.
No, I'm literally like trying to like lower my blood pressure right now. like listening to that message.
Fucking nuts that because people don't understand
it's nuts. And I think the thing is, I think when white people couch these kinds of sentiments in like, I love you, but mm-hmm. I think they don't understand. Not I think. They very much don't understand that it's just as racist as someone who outwardly thinks that black people are garbage and like, you know, like this comparison or this unwillingness to see the difference even now in Trump land, like I think is absurd. And I think that I don't have any time for it anymore. And well, I don't even want to like,
so no mind-boggling.
It's nobody's job to like educate this person.
No, fucking Google. About how dumb they are. If Michigan was 99% white, their water situation would have been fixed.
I genuinely don't feel like we even have to go over this anymore. I mean, it's like Trump is the president for this exact reason.
But like, if my listeners are listening and you're feeling some type of way.
You feel some type of way.
Just know that the president threw paper towels at Puerto Rico. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
There's just like a thing where, you know, he said that African countries are shithole. Like, there's. You got to understand that, like, people who are not white presenting are met at a disadvantage a lot of the time. Like, if you get to start at 100, we start at, like, an 80.
Yeah.
70.
But the thing about that message in particular that really bothers me is, like, you know, Trump came to rise because of white resentment. Mm-hmm. Because of white people because of nice white people who have black friends who are secretly angry about whatever the fuck that they've been made to believe is wrong.
How many conversations I have been privy to about straight white men saying, ugh, I can't get a job right now because they're only looking to go ethnic, or I lost a role because they're going ethnic. And now I don't feel like I'm the one who needs to educate you, but I'm like,
no.
You think you lost a role? Well, if the two leads were people of color, guess who would get that character role, my character friend? It'd be you.
You know what I think it genuinely is? I think it's because for the first time, white people are realizing that they also have to compete. When, like, black people and immigrants have been competing the entire time, we've always known that no one hands you anything.
Yeah.
But now that you're actually having to compete because it's a more globalized world, you're angry. And it's like, instead of being angry, just compete. Like, just get to work and stop pointing fingers, you nice white person who is secretly not nice at all.
I cannot think of a black actor or actress who has a story where they're like, the first audition I went on, I booked it. I feel like we all work so fucking
hard.
We work
so hard.
I can't.
With
like, there's
no safety net a lot of the time.
No. No. You just have to like keep fucking grinding.
You just have to keep grinding. And the thing is like, it's okay for everyone to have to compete. That's what everyone's been doing.
That's
the whole world's been
is.
Doing that the whole time. I don't know. These things make me very annoyed. I'm just like, because it's taking my attention from like a white person who's perfectly fine. You know, like, it's just like, you didn't have to send that message.
No, and I don't know why you, did you think I was going to read it and go, oh,
yeah.
Well, I guess the poor whites are,
And also this
really,
nice white person
really
is also policing you, by the way. They're telling you what to think and what to do, and it's like, and it's a boy, it's a white man, of course, who thinks he very nicely is telling you what to do. I don't even, girl, I'm just like, don't come to this podcast.
I mean,
don't come to Why Won't You Date
I'm
Me.
I'm not sure why he thought I would
this
read
this is gonna
that.
Be your space.
Yes, and I would go, oh, yes.
Get out of here, dude.
And one of the reasons why I got off Facebook is because one of my dear, dear friends had posted something about racial inequality, and she was like, me as a white person, I need to be more cognizant that the world is not inherently inclusive. I have an advantage. White privilege is a real thing, and I just need to remember that in my soul. And I was like, ooh, baby, my friend is fucking, I don't like the term woke, but I was like, she's being thoughtful.
Yes, I know, have plenty of white friends who are always like, you know what? I'm not going to ask you to spend the emotional energy to explain this to me. I'm like,
I can
thank
use
you.
Fucking Google, and someone
thank
has
you.
Already written an essay
and
about
that's,
it.
Exactly.
There are people you could follow on Twitter who will clear some shit up for you. And so someone commented on it. I came from poverty. I was never at an advantage. I didn't have money, blah, 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 blah. And I commented, I was like, it's not a money thing. It is just like at face value.
I always tell white people, you are someone who questions white privilege, and I honestly like don't want to, like, I feel like I'm done with this person.
I mean.
Just because it raises my blood pressure. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if you're a white person who questions your white privilege, if I ask you, would you rather not be white right now? If someone gave you the option to not be white right now, and you have your stomach clenches up, your heart starts to race, because the same person who claims there is no white privilege would never want to not
give
be white.
Up being white.
And I wonder why. I wonder if it's because you know you are at an advantage, even if you are poor. No one's saying that white, like, I get mad just having to explain this because
there
we all know you know what it is.
Because
you won't give it up.
Iconic Oprah episode where this old white woman's like, right? You know, think white privilege exists.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
To be black and a room full of white people are like, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
I mean,
the very same white people who 2 seconds before said there is no white privilege.
Yes.
So what is it that you're scared to lose if it doesn't exist?
And then in the same breath.
This is why, to me, these conversations are nonsensical. They don't make sense. It's like I'm talking to a dumb, uneducated person.
Yep.
So I'd rather talk to someone who is acknowledging reality. Because now it's like we can't even be on the same wavelength. Because you're not acknowledging reality.
When people are like, white privilege doesn't exist, I'm like, y'all know that like my aunts and uncles lived through segregation? Like,
Chris Rock, on one of his specials, talked about, I think it was on Tambourine, he talked about how like his mom or dad or his grandmother or whatever it had to go to the vet for the dentist.
What?
Because they couldn't go to a white dentist. They had to
go
to the vet.
It's crazy that people are
This is Chris Rock's fucking parent.
People are still alive who had to sit in the balcony at a movie theater because they couldn't sit below.
But not only that, every freaking day I have to deal with being a black woman. I have all white reps, and I'm very aware of the fact that I'm a black person when I'm on the phone with all white reps.
Like, I mean, being a black woman is very hard. I had a meeting with some reps who were like, I had said, I can't remember what I said that created the response where they said, well, we only work as hard as you work.
Thank you.
I said, I work very hard.
Wait, how recent was this?
This was very recent when I dropped my old manager.
When you're on multiple TV shows and touring and have a podcast. Uh-huh. Okay, cool.
Yeah, they
That's
were like,
really
we only
nice.
Work as hard as you work. And I said, well, I like took a moment and I said, I work pretty hard. Nobody's ever just given me anything.
Right.
I've been lucky. I've been in the right place at the right time.
Right.
But on top of the things that I've gotten being lucky, I've created other opportunities.
Truly, I am shaking, Nicole.
I work maybe 7 days a week. Most of the year.
Yeah.
I'm on a fucking plane almost every week.
Truly.
I don't turn down a lot of opportunities because you don't know what opportunity begets opportunity.
Yeah.
I work hard.
You do.
I just was like so floored that they looked at me and thought that like world wanted to give a fucking fat black woman a chance.
If anything, they should be like, we would love to work with you. You work so hard.
Fat black women who have careers.
Yes.
I can count it on my fucking hand. And you want to say you'll only work as hard as I work? Then, bitch, I guess you're going to work 24/7.
This is some bullshit.
No, I went with reps who were like, we see how hard you work and we like it.
That's how you talk to
you. Being a black woman is very hard. We have to take a break. And we're back! Charlotte, we were talking about how hard it is to be a black woman. According to a lot of studies that I have read, a lot of articles, the bottom of the dating totem pole is black women and Asian men.
Mm-hmm.
And you are married to an Asian man that you met on a fucking app.
Yes.
Girl. Spell.
Bae's cute, though. I don't know what they're talking about.
I think he's very handsome.
Bae's a cutie patootie. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, I mean, I feel like this study was, like, old.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's still true. But
I don't know if it's still true either. I need to Google again.
Yeah.
But can you tell me? Okay, so before you met your now husband, were you dating a lot?
No.
Okay. So you turned to the apps. Yes. Was Tinder the first one you joined?
No. It was probably the fourth, fifth, maybe.
Yeah. And then how far into having Tinder did you meet him?
I actually met him very early on Tinder because Tinder was like the last app that I used. Mm-hmm. And I was at my wit's end. I was like right about to give up. I was just like, whatever, I'll just try this one since it's a new one and mm-hmm. everybody's on it. And I think I like deleted it right before I like put it back on again because the last person I met before I deleted it stood me up in the most annoying way.
Wait, how?
Like we rescheduled a bunch of times mm-hmm. and then I literally went to the place that we said we were going to meet. And then he texted me like, hey, I don't think I can come. And I was just like, you didn't think that you could have texted me that 2 hours ago?
Yes.
And I think I messaged him. I was like, hey, here, where are you? Like, I think that shit is so rude,
that
obviously.
That is so rude.
I was so, I was so appalled at just, like, the lack of home training.
Yes.
Like, the lack of, like, politeness that I just was like, fuck this app. I don't want to use this. And then I was like, fine, I'll give it one more shot. Mm-hmm. Like, that was, like, the one person that I met.
But also, this explains why anytime I meet a man, like, 2 hours beforehand, they're like, are we still meeting? And I'm always like, yeah, bro, we fucking made this time.
Yeah, it's because
I can't imagine standing someone up. I'm late to everything, but I can't imagine just not showing up.
It would be beyond me to just not show up and not tell anyone that I'm...
Yeah.
And then that person had the audacity to mm-mm. message me after that.
Mm.
After they stood me up to say, hey, do you want to meet up? And I blocked them and I was just like, we're never... Like,
no,
you're
so
dead
sorry.
Now.
We are never ever getting back together. Is it a?
It's a song. That's a Taylor Swift song.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I just got sent a Taylor Swift PR box from Netflix
Sweet.
For her Reputation tour. I thought it was something. So okay, I had a decorator decorate my abode, and I thought it was something she had ordered, but it turned out it was just a PR kit from Netflix, and it just sang a bunch of Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad, and I said, I throw this right away.
I'm a secret Taylor Swift fan.
Really?
I will take it, yeah.
Okay, here's...
I don't talk about it, and I don't listen to her when other black people are around, but I fucks with
I
it.
Love that black people have, like, little secrets where they're like, I won't do this in front of my other black friends, but, I do love this one Taylor Swift song. The one that's Look What You Made Me Do.
I
think
love
is
that
a
whole album.
Perfect pop. Yeah. It's a perfect pop song. I love it.
I think she has a bunch of perfect pop songs. They're so fun.
She is not my favorite performer to watch.
I've never watched her perform and I never
T
will.
T-Swift, if you're listening,
songs.
I'm so sorry. I think you need to get more in tune with your body.
She's boring. She's super boring, but
a
I wanna be your end game. Fucks with that shit, bro.
Wait, okay.
I wanna
so
be your first. I'm like,
this
damn
man,
it, these songs are so fun. Yes.
He didn't meet up with you. Then he was like, meet up with me. And you're
yes,
like, no,
and then
no,
I was
no.
Like, you're dead. No.
So then you put
me.
Tinder back on your phone.
I did, because I was just like, I had no other prospects.
Yes.
So I'm like, all right, you get lonely again. And you're like, okay. And I think he was. One of the first people I met, and I've only met two people. Like, I only met two people from. I mean, I was supposed to meet one, and he
yes.
didn't show up because he talked to a bunch of people, but I never actually met a bunch of people.
Your dating life is a literal baseball game.
It sucks.
You had three strikes, and
yeah.
one of them you weren't out.
And me
is that baseball?
The first app I don't know
baseball. Right?
And I didn't have three strikes. I had two, I guess. I mean, I had one.
Oh,
and then the
yes.
second person
okay,
I
so
met.
Okay, so you had two strikes and then a home run.
Yes.
There we go. That's
I had one
baseball.
Strike and then a home run. Is it?
Okay. I think so.
Don't
And
know.
Then there's 22 innings.
What? That's a lot.
I don't know. There's a fucking lot of innings.
That's a lot of innings.
I've never been
baseball
to a baseball
so
game, and I'm waiting for the right person to
I
convince
did, and
me.
I fell asleep.
Really?
It's boring, yeah.
The way it was described to me was, it's a bar with a game going on. It's a
That's
live game.
That's basically it. And it's not, like, athletic at all. It's just a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, a bunch of dudes fucking swinging bats trying to
That's
hit
exactly
little balls.
That's exactly what it is. Some of them got bellies. Like, they don't look
yeah.
like they're athletes.
Babe Ruth had a big old belly.
He had a giant belly. It's just a bunch of dudes. Seems like anyone can play baseball.
Yeah, I could probably play baseball. I can't.
You
I was
could.
Bad at T-ball. I would always hit the fucking T-stand or whatever. Anywho, so you meet the boo.
I meet the boo. I mean, the first app I was ever on, well, it was before we had apps. I was on eHarmony. That was the first thing I ever got on.
They rejected me.
Oh, you can get rejected by eHarmony?
You sure can. And then my sister had her account, someone like broke into it and posted different photos. It was like very weird. So they kicked her off of it. So the buyer girls cannot be on eHarmony.
I was on eHarmony in college, and which is the lamest thing in the world because college is a place you go to meet dudes, and I did not meet anyone.
That is kind of
so
funny
lame.
That you were like, no, I won't fellowship around campus. I'll stay in my room and on my computer.
I wanted a real, I'm using air quotes, a real man, just because I was an RA in college, and I felt that the dudes were too immature.
Sure.
I've always been an old lady, in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't, I wanted someone, more mature. But
fair,
and
that
I
makes
also
sense.
Just was, a giant nerd and I wasn't dating. And I was such a nerd. And I was also, super Christian. Oh, whatever.
I mean, yeah, we all have things that we need to tear through.
We do.
I went to college with I went to musical theater school, so it was just a bunch of gay men. So, I wasn't going to find anyone on campus.
Right.
So I had to just fuck random people I met in bars.
My college was 70% women and 30% guys because it used to be an all-girls school that went co-ed a few years before I got there. Mm-hmm. A lot of gay dudes.
Okay.
I fit in. It was a perfect experience for me. I really loved
love
it.
I truly love gay men.
Yeah.
They're just great. I have so many gay male friends that I just really am so thankful for. So wait, tell me about meeting your boo-boo.
Okay. So we meet on Tinder. Yeah. We match. And what I liked about him on Tinder was after a few, the first day we messaged, we already knew we were going to meet each other, which I liked.
Okay.
Because some dudes will drag it on for God knows why.
If a dude doesn't say, let's go for drinks within a week, I'm done.
But that's what I mean. Within the first day that we were messaging, he was like, hey, do you want to meet? And I was like, yes.
Okay.
That is why we're doing this.
Uh-huh.
So we decided to meet. At the time, I was hosting a show at UCB East called Something Cool. It was a midnight show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I also had lost all hope, you know? I was just like, whatever, I'm dead inside as far as dudes and dating goes.
Oh, I know the feeling.
So I wanted to have this date and just have something else to do so that I have an exit.
Yes.
And I look busy, because I am busy. I was busy at the time, but I just wanted an exit.
You just
wanted
him to know that you were busy and not making something up. You were like, I have a tangible thing.
I have a thing to do, but I also really wanted an out. I wanted a time to this date. I know it's going to end because I'd been on a bunch of awkward dates that I had to just be like, all right, bye. But
it is weird. And I would love to know how other people end dates.
Yeah.
But I usually just go, I have a really early morning and I gotta go. So,
I'm such a terrible liar, to the point where I think that, I mean, I think I'm a little, I don't know if it's, not cool to say this, but I feel a little bit on the spectrum when it comes to, I just tell the exact truth, very plain.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here anymore. I'll just be I want to go now. I'm not good at lying or making up a reason. And when I do, I start to stutter and I start to sweat a little. So I just say, I think this is good.
We've come to a natural
end.
Yeah,
I think this is over.
Yeah, goodbye.
So I wanted an exact end time to this date.
Yes.
So I have my show. We're supposed to meet around 8 or 9. He ends up running late to the date.
Mm-hmm.
He texts me, which is all I ask if you're running late, text, because that is nice. So he texts me, he's running late, he's coming from Jersey. I'm like, cool.
Oh, okay.
We meet at Greenwich Treehouse. This is the first date that we ever have. He texts me, he goes, I'm the Jesus-looking Indian guy when you see me. And I'm like, I'm the black-looking black girl when you see me. And I was sitting by the window, I was wearing my tight little dress.
Yeah.
It was cold as fuck. It was February.
Uh-huh.
And we meet. He buys me. He's gorgeous. I think he's got beautiful eyes.
Oh.
And he buys me a drink.
Mm-hmm.
We start talking. I'm a mute on this date. I literally don't talk the first hour, I think. I answer his questions, but I think I was just so I mean, the whole time I'm just having dialogue in my head about, like, what I'm looking at and, like, what's happening. Because from the very beginning of the date, he was just normal and just normal. Like, I don't even know how else to describe it.
I feel like, let's see, I've only had that happen one time where I was, like, looking across from someone and I was like, oh, my God, I think you're a person that I can talk to for a long time.
And it's so sad because the bar is so low. And it was just like,
very low.
He was just talking to me like a person. And I was like, this is weird. Like,
but also it's just like someone who seems to be genuinely interested in you.
He's a good conversationalist. Mm-hmm. He was just genuinely interested in meeting me and talking to me. And like, I couldn't believe it. So the whole time I was just in my head, like, I think he's normal. and he's cute. And I think he's kind of likes me because like he would do things like touch my shoulder or like, you know, like just do the things that I'm like, oh, he likes me.
Uh-huh.
I think he kissed me like, I think 2 hours, like not super long into the date.
Wait, so like your date didn't end with a kiss? You were kissing while the date was going?
And we talk about this all the time because I think like his Mac game was so strong, you know, like because I was just like I'd been on other, and you know, like if you're in the comedy scene, if a comic wants to bang, like they'll do weird things, like because they just want to bang, so they don't want to
They don't want to, like, lead you on and make you think that they, like, want a real relationship.
So they'll just, like, but there's always just, like, weirdness, you know, because you don't know what's going on. And you start to get it, like, oh, they just, like, want to bang. But, like, he did things, or I would be on a date and I just wouldn't know if the guy liked me or found me attractive. Or, like, I would be with a friend who I think was kind of trying to, like, flirt. But it's confusing.
Wait, so how did he kiss you in the middle of your date?
I don't even remember because, again, I have a terrible memory, but were just
talking.
Were
across from each other?
I was sitting on a stool and he was standing and we were facing each other.
Oh, okay. So you were like at a bar.
We were at a bar. We were at Greenwich Treehouse.
Okay.
And, what is that? Like,
I've never been to Grandma's Treehouse.
It's in Greenwich Village. So now I'm going to go into a British accent.
Okay.
But like, anyway, so he kisses me. Please. I don't remember how it happened, but it definitely took me by surprise because it was like, again, in my head, like, oh my God, he kissed me. Like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it wasn't gross. It wasn't too intense, you know what I mean? It was just like, it was just right. It was like, okay, I get it, you know? And then from there on, like, his hand was on my waist, but not in a way that was, like, too pushy. It was just in a way that I was like, I find you attractive.
I find you attractive and I feel comfortable enough
exactly.
to do this.
And I want you to know that I want to touch you. And
oh,
I was like, I
boy.
Get it, you know? So we're so engrossed in the date, even though I'm, like, literally mute. I literally don't talk the entire time. And I realize that, oh, shit, it's, like, 11:50. It's, like, 11-something. I have to run and go to my freaking show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm freaking out. At the time, I didn't tell him this, but I was so fucking broke. I didn't have enough money for, like, a cab.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go down. I think it's, like, 11:15 or whatever. I just jumped the shark of the story. But anyway, it's like 11:15. We run. Mm-hmm. We go down to the train. I'm waiting for the F train. Fucking F train is like not running. It's like fucking midnight on a
Saturday. I mean, the F train is
Saturday. It was just like unreal. I was so mad.
Mm-hmm.
So we wait for the F train for like probably 20 minutes, probably 30.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I just literally leave the station. And I start booking it to my show because, again, we're, like, at the F train.
Wait,
so
did you leave him down there?
No, he came with me.
Oh, okay. He came to the show?
Okay, I'm not telling this story well. So I tell him that I have a fucking show and I gotta go, you know? So he was like, can I come?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I didn't really want you to come, but I kind of feel like I like you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think we're having a good time, so you can come, but just know it's a comedy show, and sometimes comedy shows are great, and sometimes they're awful. So, like, don't have any expectation, and I don't want to talk about the show after the show. Like, don't say anything to me about the show, no matter how it goes or whatever.
Okay.
So we go to the F train, wait for the F train for, like, fucking half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It never fucking comes. I have to, like, book it out of the station, I'm too broke for a cab and I don't want to tell him that or ask him for it. Mm-hmm. So I'm literally walking from like what the West 4th stop to like 2nd Avenue. Like,
yeah, that sucks.
It's a walk. It's a walk. So I'm just like huffing it. And I'm like, my friend James was on the show that night and I texted him and I was like, can you open the show for me? Because I don't think I'm going to fucking make it. And I'm like I'm so type A about being like, it's my show. So I'm like, I can't be late.
Yeah,
like,
it's my show.
And I'm late because I'm a hussy. I'm like on a fucking, you know.
Because I'm trying to get my pussy dipped in.
And I'm like, you know, I'm liking a guy, but like, whatever. So I'm like huffing it to the show. He's walking in lockstep with me. Mm-hmm. He's like freaking out. He's like, what can I do? How can I help you? And I'm just like, no, there's nothing you can do. I'm just like huffing it to my fucking show. I make it right on time, mm-hmm. like literally like running on my feet to the show with him beside me. Mm-hmm. He sits in the audience. We start the show. At the time, I had just released my web series and I was screening mm-hmm. episodes of my web series. So he learned a ton about me.
So much.
He learned a ton about me on this show. He saw me host the show. Mm-hmm. He saw me do stand up. He saw my web series.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, I light up when I'm hosting a show, yes. when I'm doing comedy. I love it, you know? So he kind of sees me in my element. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's sexy, you know, mm-hmm. of course. And I'm not a usually confident person, but in those moments, I'm very confident. Mm-hmm. This is what I put my heart and soul into, you know. So I genuinely think that that is what made him be like, oh, shit, you know. But like, even if he was like, oh, shit, I don't know. But after the show, I have a great show. I'm like hanging out with all my friends. He hangs back, mm-hmm. which I loved. Because he didn't try to, like, be a part of the conversation.
He doesn't know you.
He doesn't know me. He doesn't know them. Yes. He didn't try to, like, take attention. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's great. That's a great thing.
I mean, I was just like, this is the perfect date. Because I see so much of how we could, you know, interact or be good or bad for mm-hmm. each other because of how you're acting in these situations, you know? Like, I was freaking out, and he tried to be supportive, but he also, like, gave me space mm-hmm. because I'm, like, freaking out. There's nothing you can do. I'm, like, huffing it to my show, mm-hmm. and I'm not telling you that I'm too broke to afford a cab at this point. But, and then so, like, I finished chatting with all my friends and, like, you know, saying bye to everyone and thanking mm-hmm. them for being on the show. We have a drink at the bar at UCB East. Mm-hmm. And then... I tell him I'm tired. It's like 2 or 3 or mm-hmm. whatever. And I'm, again, an old lady. So I'm
What time
like,
did you guys meet?
We met, I think, around 9. I think we were supposed to meet at 8.
How magical.
Yeah.
What a nice long day.
Exactly. We were supposed to meet at 8, but he was late. So he got there around 9. And then I had to be at my show at midnight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, around 11:15, I start to roll over. And then, of course, that whole F-train thing mm-hmm, happened. Mm-hmm, so, like, mm-hmm. that was the timeline. And so I'm like, I'm sleepy. I want to go home. And he's like, all right, I'll ride with you on the train.
Okay.
And I was like, okay. But I also know that nothing's going to happen because I'm not going to do anything. And I was just like, are you sure? Because I live all the way in Harlem, you know, and mm-hmm. we were in the East Village and it's long. And I was like, are you sure? Like, you know, and he insisted to ride with me on the train. So... he rides with me on the train. Mm-hmm. We get off. I get off a stop before my regular stop because I'm Haitian and I'm, you know, I don't trust nobody, especially not dudes.
That's hilarious.
We get off a stop before and I say, all right, thank you. Like, this is where I leave you. Mm-hmm. And we said goodbye. And then we met up again, you know, a few days later.
Yeah,
he texted me. He was just like, you want to hang out again? We met up again a few days later.
Okay.
He does the same thing. He rides with me, like, mm-hmm. back home on the train. Mm-hmm. And I figure out at this point that he lives in fucking, where is it? What is this neighborhood? Fort Hamilton, Brooklyn.
Okay.
He literally lives like the opposite.
Yes,
like he
that is so fucking
so he would,
far away.
He would ride with me like on the fucking train mm-hmm. like, all the way up to Harlem and then ride back down all the way down to Brooklyn. Because he's trying to get laid. But I'm just like, man, this guy is putting in effort.
Effort. That
and
is
I
some
have
time.
Never
that is some
seen
work.
Effort. ever.
Oh,
I had
boy.
Never, ever, ever, ever. Did I say ever?
No.
I had never seen effort before. Dear God. I was just like, what is going on?
I mean, that's incredible. I don't think any dude has ever put in that effort for me.
I was just like, just that. He like opened doors. He was funny. I was just like, obviously I'm like married. but as soon as that stuff happened, I was like, I'm with you now. Like, we're together sir.
So how long did you guys date before you got married?
We dated for a year before we got married. We moved in, I think, 9 months in. Which I was very, I think I was, I mean, not I think, I was absolutely more afraid to move in than I was to get married. Well, I don't think marriage is real, you know?
Marriage like, isn't real. Marriage is
it's just a piece of paper. But like
moving in and sharing your life with someone,
that's crazy. I can't hide my crazy. I cry for like shits and giggles. Like, I just want to cry.
You're like, it's Tuesday, time for me to cry.
Like, I cry just because. And he's just like a very, you know, yeah, like, I was very nervous to move in with this person because I was like, I don't want you to see me.
I cannot imagine living with somebody.
Yeah.
I have ADD, and I'm very forgetful, and just very small tasks seem unmanageable.
Yeah.
Like, putting away laundry is something that is... a thing that I like, every time I do it, it is a conquest. Like, yeah. I did it. Opening mail is a thing that is hard. Papers are hard.
Then we all have ADD then, because I don't, like, these things are hard.
Well, some people can, like, just get through chores. Like, my roommate can do his laundry, fold it, and put it away.
But is he as busy as you?
Sometimes.
Okay.
It's all just right. Like, he could do a lot of things that, like, I just cannot do.
All right.
And then I'm like, well, if I invite someone to live with me, then I have to, like, stay on, like, figure out, like, a tip or a trick to, like, stay on top of not being a messy little monster.
Well, I mean, I think you shouldn't judge yourself. This is my personal opinion. I think you shouldn't judge yourself too harshly because you know, the fact that you can't do menial tasks, like, so a lot of people can't do what you do. You know, like, a lot of people can't get up on stage and whatever. It doesn't matter. I think that it doesn't add anything to your life to, you know, judge yourself for not being able to do these menial tasks. You can literally hire a maid. It's like...
Yes.
And I mean, sometimes, like, I find these kinds of tasks, you know, what is the word? Meditative. Because I also, it's hard for me to focus and do these tasks, and I can be very messy, and he's not. He's very, like, everything's folded, everything has a place. He has a phone that he's had for, like, 5 years that does not have a scratch on it and doesn't have a cover. And my phone looks like it's been through wars. And I drop it constantly. Like, I literally one time flew out of my hand just because I just was, like, pointing at something with my phone. My phone flew out of my hand and into the street. Like, it's just, he's just such the opposite of me in so many ways. And I was very nervous about being compared and judged. And I think that, like, I genuinely think I'm, like, very blessed, you know? Like, I think this is, like, he's not perfect. I'm obviously not perfect. But, like, there are a lot of ways that I think that, like, I had a lot of issues with self-esteem and insecurity that I think if I had another person, they would have exacerbated those things and made them worse. And he's a person who's very much given me the space and encouragement to love myself, dare I say?
What a treat.
It has not been easy. You know, it has not been easy.
No, I mean, I don't think relationships are inherently easy because it's two people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, personalities. There's a lot of, you know, different, like, you were raised differently.
We were.
So you're just fully different people.
This is one of my biggest challenges. And it's one of the reasons why therapy has been so helpful. I go to therapy separately by myself, you know, just from my, because he grew up in India in an extremely loving, supportive home. Like, his parents, his mom is dope. He has tattoos, you know, his family's very Catholic. But, like, my mom thought, you know, I was possessed because I wanted to go to therapy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, we just grew up in such different households.
Uh-huh.
Like, I grew up in, you know, a pretty dysfunctional one, because I think it's like, you know, if you're a Black immigrant and you don't have a lot of money in America, it's very hard to not have some dysfunction in the home.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think, like, I don't think it's like particularly being a Black immigrant. I think capitalism breeds dysfunction in families in America.
Yeah.
I think American families are very dysfunctional.
Well, to me, my understanding of capitalism is like the dream is to be a Jeff Bezos.
Yes.
We are worth $11 billion and your workers jump out of windows because they're like killing themselves because they make pennies.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you just, I don't know, gave $1 billion of your dollars to your workers, everyone could have like a living wage.
Yeah.
And you're still worth $10 billion.
Yeah.
This is my war on Jeff Bezos. Jeffy, if you're listening, yes, I have Amazon Prime. Am I happy about it? No. But like, it just like, it's, capitalism is crazy.
It's crazy.
Like, a lot of companies, I won't name them, but like, don't have to pay taxes. And it's like,
they don't.
But I pay taxes?
Yeah.
But like, when I was making no money, like, I had to pay fucking taxes.
No,
like,
it's really, really, truly fucked up in a lot of fucking ways. And I genuinely think that growing up in America, like, whenever I'm hanging out with like his Indian friends, they find it so weird that so many Americans don't want to go home for the holidays. Like, that going home for the holidays is like people, you know, joke about how much they hate their families
mm-hmm.
here. And they just don't relate because mm-hmm. they don't hate their families, because uh-huh. family is very important in India. And people take great pains to, like, be close to their family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think India is changing because it's becoming more capitalist
uh-huh.
and like it's breaking families apart more. But I also think that he lived through the generation where family is super important, and like they just do not relate to this idea of like I don't talk to some people in my family sometimes. Like sometimes mm-hmm. like I'm like, I have, you know, we're not talking. And he just finds this unbelievable. Like, he just doesn't understand. I mean, he understands, but it's just, mm-hmm. like, foreign to him. You know what I mean?
My roommate's family is so supportive of him.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he genuinely loves them. And they, like, go to, like, the Jersey Shore every summer together. They go skiing together.
They hang out. They like
and
each other.
I constantly am like, oh, my God, John, what's it like to like your family?
And
he's always like, Nicole, you're the weird one. I'm like, no.
Yeah,
you're the weird one. Like, they'll send him fucking cutouts of himself. Like, they watch stuff that I'm on because I live with him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, your family supports me more than my family.
Yeah, it's really sad. And I really feel like the first few years of our relationship was me facing shit I didn't even know I had. Like,
mm-hmm.
was me recreating dysfunction in our relationship that I had seen. Thank you, Mary, for telling me this, because mm-hmm. I was like, oh, is that what I'm doing? Like,
Mary, man.
But it was me.
And,
you know, at the time we were in New York, so I had a different therapist
mm-hmm.
and she wasn't as insightful. You know, I had to figure a lot of this shit out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I'm recreating things that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mom, who is my sweetheart and I love her so much. But whenever her and my dad would fight, like, she would just like not talk to him. You know,
mm-hmm.
like she would just like give him the silent treatment. And so that's what I would do,
mm-hmm.
because that's how I saw you get, you know, affection. That's how I saw you make someone feel bad for, like,
mm-hmm.
making you mad or upsetting you or whatever. But that shit does not breed a good relationship.
No.
Not only that, it's immature. It's
mm-hmm.
It makes you look like a baby. You know what I mean? I was just like, oh, like, I have to talk to him. Like, I can't just, like, ignore him
mm-hmm.
and be like, I'm not talking to you. You know what I mean? I was just like, that shit does not work. You know, like, it was just things like that I would do that I was just
mm-hmm.
like, oh, snap. Like, I'm, I was just like, oh, snap. I need to figure this out. Yeah, I had to figure a lot of things out.
Mary brought up with me, she was just like, the way you act with men, you do have daddy issues. You did, like, I never thought I had daddy issues, but I have full-blown daddy issues, and I spent a lot of time looking for the approval from men to say that I'm okay.
Yeah.
Because my daddy never did that.
Yeah.
And then my sister, my dad loved my sister. So sometimes I would be mean to my sister, and I was like, oh, I mean to her because I resent that my dad liked and accepted her. But I mean, he liked and accepted her because she like liked school and liked learning. And I was like, bippity bop, what's outside? Yeah. ADD.
But I do think that parents have a responsibility if they have kids to love their kid and accept them the way that they are.
Yeah, unless they're like a sociopath who's like strangling cats every night. Right,
but like unconditional love, meaning that you just...
You can love a sociopath normal.
You love who they are.
Uh-huh.
Whether or not you agree with who they are, but you just delight in who they are.
Yes.
Because that is the only way to affirm a kid and not fuck them up. Like, I had a lot of trust issues because of, you know, like what I saw growing up. I had a lot. I think the absolute biggest thing that I had to deal with, and it was like so lame when I like realized this, but I was just like, oh, I really don't love myself. And I think that, not I think, you genuinely cannot really be in a real, I think it's going to be very difficult to be in a relationship if you don't love yourself. So that was a big, I mean, it's been a journey, man.
But I do think that's like a nice thing to touch on, that you do need to love yourself before. Like, RuPaul says it at the end of every episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I fully believe this mantra. Like, if you get a chance, even if you don't like drag, listen or like read interviews that Ru has done, because Ru is very much like, take care of yourself first. Like, she'll talk about meditating in the morning and like getting to be one with yourself before you start your day. But then at RuPaul's Drag Race, she always goes, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love someone else? Can I get an amen?
Yeah.
It's true.
It's 100% true. You have to, you have to, you have to. And being with another person doesn't make it happen. You still have to do the work by yourself. Yeah.
And I look at a lot of like dumpster people where I'm like, ugh, how are they in a relationship? I'm like, oh, because they're okay being a dumpster.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And slowly and surely, like, I like who I am. Every day I like myself more and more, which has been a very interesting thing. Same. To, like, hit fucking 32 or 33 or 34. I have no idea how old I am. To hit this age and be like, oh, wow, I like myself because of, like, X, Y, and Z. What a treat. What a real treat.
What a real treat.
To just enjoy this. Like, I look in the mirror. I will say there's like one day out of every 3 months where I look in the mirror and I go, yuck.
Yeah.
This is, you're nasty. But the other days I look in the mirror and I'm like, I love this.
I think that's amazing.
I love what I see. And I know people could be like, yeah, but you put on wigs, you wear makeup. And I'm like, yeah, because that's my mask for the world. And I love creating it. But at night when I'm just at home, I wear a weird sleep bonnet that's very big. It makes me look like a painter.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge. And I'll wear my round Harry Potter glasses. I look like a little weirdo, and I love it.
I love it.
I love it.
I love it.
We truly have talked for a very long time.
We have.
Ooh, let me ask you. Would you date me?
Yeah.
Would you? Because I am consistently late and bad at communicating.
Do you know what is interesting, Nicole? Like, before I started listening to this podcast, no, because I do I do have a pet peeve about late. I don't like that stuff.
We have a history. We used to host a show together. I was so bad at communicating things with you, and I own that, and I apologize.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Very bad at communicating, and at the time was like, I'm doing pretty good.
No.
I told you what was up when I figured out what was up. And it was like, well, no. If you're going to miss a show and you know a day before, don't wait till the day of.
Thank you. That is a thing
I'm truly working on.
Thank you. So, yes, at that time, absolutely no. I was just like, no. But since you've started doing this podcast, and the other thing about when we were hosting that show together is I had never felt like I knew you.
Okay.
I never, ever felt like I connected with you, really.
Okay.
And the weirdest thing is that I listen to this podcast regularly. It's one of my fucking favorite podcasts.
Oh, thank you.
And I truly feel like I've gotten to know you in a different way, in a way that I did not know you when we were hosting a show together. And I love how vulnerable and open you are on this podcast.
Oh,
and it has made me love you.
I think what probably needed to happen was we needed to spend time together outside of performing.
Yeah.
And then I think putting a show together is really hard. And I don't think I realized how hard and how much work it was going to be. And I think I would just get really overwhelmed because I had like a lot of other stuff that I was trying to do, and I was traveling and working. And then like also I was like, oh, and I have to do a show. Oh God, I don't know. I'll just show up and then I'll leave. And then it was just like, well, no, I'm co-hosting a show with somebody. I need to get to know that person. And I don't think I did the work to do that. And lo and behold, we don't have a show no more.
Yeah.
But I also had a dream in my brain where I was like, I'm going to host a show every week. And guess what? BB, I'm going to have an hour of new material every month. And then it was just like, no, I don't have the time. No, I don't know. This is time. So hard.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah. Do you still host it? No.
No, I don't.
It's hard.
It's a lot of work.
It is so hard to host a show and get an audience.
Yeah.
People who do it every week, I'm like, bravo to fucking you.
Yeah.
Well, Charlotte, I would date you. But you married. Okay, so someone DM'd me and asked for advice. And if you ask me for advice, I will screenshot it and I will talk about it. Although I am unorganized, so it might take me a minute to get to you. So this was sent to me in February. Nicole, how do you get through bad dates? I'm so fed up with dating and I haven't been on a real date in over a year due to my own insecurities with talking to people. I went on a date tonight and he pointed out all my insecurities and ended the date. So I walked home crying, couldn't even wait for an Uber. How does he keep going on dates, or how do I keep going on dates after all this discouragement? I feel like shit now. Okay. Any person, here's my advice. If you have a thought, please chime in. But my advice is, if there's a person who's going to meet up with you and insult you to your face and point out your insecurities, just get up and leave.
Leave.
That's not the person for you. That's a piece of shit human being who's getting off making you feel bad to make themselves feel better. You don't fucking need that. You are perfect in your way. He's perfect in his way, even though he hasn't figured out how to be perfect without putting someone else down. You two are not for each other.
You're not. But also, I want to say that the world gaslights women in a way that they don't gaslight men. Like, the fact that this woman thinks that she has to even question leaving. You know what I mean? Like, if someone makes you feel uncomfortable,
leave.
You don't have to question that feeling. If you think that you might not like this person, imagine spending more time with them.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to be better than this date.
Nope, they're putting
their best
foot
forward. They're only going to get worse.
They're being very poorly behaved.
Listen to yourself. That is your body giving you a fight or flight, and it's like go time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, listen to yourself. Don't question if you don't like someone. I did it for so long.
Yes.
And it's, you're wasting time. Just
you're
like,
wasting time.
Bounce.
He's a piece of shit.
He's truly a piece of shit.
I think what I try to do every morning is I look in the mirror and I'm like, you're a badass bitch.
Yeah.
Fuck up today. And I think more people need to do that. And also, like, just know that you have to wade through a sea of fucking idiots.
You do.
And that's what I'm telling myself. It is hard. But also take a break if you need a break.
Take
I'm in a break.
Break
right now and I feel like I needed it.
Yeah.
Okay. So Charlotte, do you have anything that you want to promote?
Yeah, I'm going to be recording an album, my very first album at the Pasadena Ice House on April 3rd at 8:30.
Yeah. And where can I get tickets?
Pasadena Ice House.
Yes, go to the Pasadena.com.
PasadenaIceHouse.com.
Yes.
And
do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's CharlotteLarson.com.
Will there be tickets available
there? Yes, there will be.
There you go.
You'll get the link to the tickets.
What a treat. What a dream. Charlotte, thank you so much for doing it. I've wanted to have you on for such a long time since you met someone on an app that I'm having so much trouble on. It gives me hope. But if you like this podcast episode, you can fucking, I don't know, keep listening. I don't know how people subscribe to podcasts. I don't listen to them. But if you send me something nasty, I will read it. This person said, girl, I'm going to get that pussy so wet. You can start an Indus River Valley civilization next to it. Here's another one. I want to eat roast beef and mashed potatoes off your booty using my hands, extra gravy. Oh, okay. I don't think I've read this one. It says, hey, Nicole, this is for your podcast. Love you. Don't read this part. Ha ha. Well, I read it. Sorry. I want to put my big hairy platypus fur suit on and make sweet love to you. I'll slap my homemade raccoon tail to your big, sweet, bubblicious butt and worship it the way it deserves. will make the folks at the Animal Planet blush. I want you to lick my bill while I find my way into your platypussy. I'm not really into furry stuff. That one was a little wild for me.
It was wild. I think the fact that we don't know how to feel is good, no?
I think it is good.
Yeah,
I think
that's
maybe
a good
this
one.
Person has cracked it.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, too dirty. Thank you for listening. Okay. Bye-bye.
This has been a Team Coco production.